claims models, and then all the more business type of marketing and retention. This session is much more in that. And Gary has also expanded use of predictive models outside insurance organizations, working on profitability by achieving better customer segmentation. Gary has a bachelor's degree in math and actuarial sciences from the University of Connecticut, and he is a fellow of the Casualty Actuarial Society and a member of the American Academy of Actuaries. Rather than break too much in between, I just want to say that Gary's talk will focus more, not specifically, but have a more of a bent towards commercial lines and business-to-business applications. Rather than break in the middle, Marty Ellingsworth will speak next. Marty will speak a little more towards towards personal lines and business-to-consumer type applications. Marty is the president of ISO Innovative Analytics, which is a unit, of course, of ISO. It's the unit focused on advanced predictive modeling tools for the property casualty industry. Marty joined IAA from a company called Full Capture Solutions. I had to look that up. I thought he was a bounty hunter for a while. But it turns out Full Capture specializes in text modeling, and there's another session, not even a chuckle. Sorry. In text modeling, he'll be speaking later on that. He was a co-founder and executive vice president of Full Capture. Marty has more than 10 years' experience in property casualty insurance industry. For 5 years, he served with the Fireman's Fund, and the remainder of his, the rest of his 25-year career also has positions at Risk Data, HMC, Workers' Compensation, the WCRI, Managed Care, and in the Air Force. He received his Bachelor of Science degree from the United States Air Force Academy and a Master of Science degree in Operations from the Air Force Institute of Technology. And with that, I turn it over to Gary Ciardello.
Thank you. All right. Good morning to everyone. I'm curious, this is in the underwriting track. So how many, show of hands, how many people have done predictive modeling work, have experience? Okay. So we have maybe about a third of the people. This will be more of a conceptual kind of view of how you use predictive modeling in a marketing application. So we won't get into details about modeling, but we will give you kind of a framework around how you can leverage off of underwriting applications and use them in a marketing capacity. And as Arthur had said, my speak is going to be a little bit more, or will be more geared to commercial. And Marty's going to cover more of the personal lines. So overview, I'm really going to give a quick overview just about predictive modeling applications. A lot of it you'll probably be familiar with. Whenever you think about marketing, it's really, you know, what are your objectives? Where do you want to grow? How do you seek better alignment with underwriting? How do you factor in constraints with distribution? And effectively try to maximize your expense dollars in ways that will give you the biggest bang for your buck. So I'm going to try to touch on some of those areas. The types of marketing applications from the context I'm going to be speaking about today really get into data. Everything's in predictive modeling usually centers around data, internal versus external data. So what you can do from a marketing perspective will really be dependent upon what type of data you have available. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And then really I'll talk briefly about applying. So when you have when you've built this marketing application and you've scored up your prospects, then the question is, well, how do I get to those prospects? Distribution obviously is a factor in that, and how you're going to reach those customers. So predictive modeling, I use a context of a value chain and not only in insurance, outside of insurance, but clearly we've seen applications across the value chain, all those key activities of an insurance company, as well as key activities of any organization. It's obviously very prevalent in the banking community and customer segmentation models. There's a lot of work in, as Arthur mentioned, in the underwriting pricing area, and a lot of work in claims. We think there's really more work that can be done in marketing, more work that can be done in distribution to leverage off what skills and techniques you've applied in underwriting pricing capacity and apply those in different parts of the value chain. So obviously the one we're going to focus on today is marketing. So as we think about marketing and we think about discretionary spending, certainly in this climate we're in today, and there's a lot of focus on expense reduction. Although a lot of the PC companies really haven't been, there's obviously a few household names of companies that have been affected. A lot of the PC companies really have not been significantly affected by the current environment. Although, as always, expenses are of issue. I don't think insurance companies, if you look at it historically and you compare it to like the banking world, haven't been overly effective at controlling expenses. It's a constant struggle. You know, how do I control my discretionary costs? How do I get the biggest bang for my buck? So we're gonna hit on that and try to talk about that, of targeting the best risks and leveraging our marketing spend. And certainly these are some other areas that you can, it's also relevant. So what are you trying to do in a marketing application? In talking with a lot of marketing folks, there's always that struggle of, I do all these types of promotions and ways of trying to attract customers, and then it goes to underwriting, and then they don't get accepted. There isn't that alignment. There's that issue of the customer, the marketing objectives versus the underwriting objectives. So how do we seek better alignment between marketing and underwriting, again, to make sure we're going at the right customer base? We want to control on the expense issue. We also would like to close the gap between new versus renewal loss ratio. So the old rule of thumb, that new business loss ratio is significantly higher. How do we minimize that differential and grow in a profitable way? As I mentioned before, I think you need to focus on where your strengths are as an organization. So where is your brand strong? Where are you competitive? Where's your distribution channel strong? All of that needs to be factored in. So after you evaluate the customer base, you're looking to go after how can you effectively get them based on these other requirements. I think the nice thing about underwriting applications from a predictive modeling perspective is that they're pretty easy to kind of incorporate. And, you know, when you think about an underwriting application, on the predictive modeling side, there's a lot of deployment issues, and I think companies, even though they may have pretty significant models and enhancements in their ability to segment their customer base, still struggle with deployment. And there's still issues. Well, we're going to make exceptions here. We're not sure how we're going to apply it. We're not sure how we're going to integrate it. Marketing is a little bit easier because you're really just talking about target customers. So there isn't this big integration issue, and there isn't this learning curve that you would experience in an underwriting capacity, where you've really got to educate the underwriting team into knowing how to use the scoring model and understanding the output, how to communicate that output to the customer as well as the agents. So from that perspective, I think it tends to be easier to kind of incorporate. So marketing objectives, a lot of these I'm sure they're familiar with. These are things you need to consider. Where do you want to grow? How much do you want to grow? What areas? What's in your business plan? What types of accounts do you want to target? How strong is your competitiveness in that area of focus? How strong is your brand? What's the state of the local market? What are the demographics in that area? Is it a growing area? If you're looking to pursue specific types of businesses, customers, are the demographics in your favor or working against your favor? You want to look at that and consider that. When you talk about distribution, depending on whether we're talking direct or agency, you have to kind of consider some of the limitations you may have there. So one of the things we found in doing some agency work was that proximity is important. If you look at agency performance if you were to geocode an agency office and their customer base, geocode the addresses, in general you would find that their profitability tends to erode as the disbursement grows. So, these are some of the factors you want to consider. Where are your strong agents located, and how does that line up to where you want to grow? And are you the preferred company? Are you not the preferred company? As I mentioned before, I think you need to consider the underwriting restrictions. Are there specific do's and don'ts in the process? Are there areas where you're just not going to write in? Are there classes to avoid, or maybe you don't have the experience to write to a certain class of business? So I think you need to know that going in. some of these points I hit on, but this, as you design the marketing plan, again, you want to know where you're out-segmenting your competition. You want to consider those demographics by age, class. Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Where are you appointing new agencies? Obviously, that's relevant. Where are your agency, you know, where is your agency base more saturated and less likely to be able to absorb growth? And how profitable really is your business by segment? So this is a lift chart. For those of you who do predictive modeling, this is kind of something you're very familiar with. But as you present results in a predictive model, you typically have a training set and a test set. And when you test to see how well the model performs, you will rank the customer base from best to worst, and then you'll compare that to what actually happened. So this gives you kind of a sort of confirmation that your model would generalize well on data it wasn't built on. So if we start over from the left of the graph, is your kind of your best decile. Going all the way over to the right is your worst decile. So from a new business perspective, obviously those best deciles are the ones you want to focus on. That's where you want to see, well, if we've been so successful here, if we're writing these accounts at a premium which is significantly above what we consider break even, how do we leverage off that? How do we grow in those areas? And how do we seek more customers that have similar profiles? Another way of demonstrating a lift chart is with this graph, which is really, again, highlighting that overpricing, underpricing concept, which is, again, the customer base that you want to target is that under overpricing area. So now, just talking about the types of applications. Again, before, it's really based on data and the availability of data. We've done some applications where we have actual external claims data, and that's always your preference. If you can get your hands on that. So as we think of data, we break it up into three groups. We break it up into external response data, which is what you're going to build the model on, whether or not you have claims, external claims data or don't. Sometimes you just can't get access to that. Then as you want to leverage off your underwriting model, and as you look at the predictors that are in your model, you're going to look at those variables that are most important all the way down to least important, and then you're going to try to see which, if any, of that information you can get in a marketing application. So obviously you want to focus on the key variables and work your way down. And in some cases there's a give and take. You may not have all the information, but you're still going to have a lot of intelligence in terms of how to segment a customer base. And of course you need some exposure information. So you need a name of business address, payroll, number of employees, if it's like a work comp application, and some unique identifier, some way of identifying the business, be it an FEIN number or some other type of unique identifier. Obviously, that's going to be important. So here, kind of broke it up into where when you do have external claims data and when you don't. When you do, which is obviously the best alternative, you could directly just build a separate model. What's neat about this is you don't really need any internal data if you can piece the exposure and the claims data together. And you compile that information, you would put it into a flat file, and then you'd model it and you'd see which variables are predictive. I think what's interesting when we've done this is you can kind of compare the differences between underwriting and pricing and marketing models to see which variables came out in the order of which they came out. Whenever you're doing an underwriting application, there's always the issue of reject bias, which is that you only see the risks that your company let to get through the filter. So you've got to be careful when you're building a model to not get a misread and actually what's predictive, what's not predictive. In a marketing application, if you have external claims data, you tend to be able to minimize that reject bias. And it's kind of interesting then to compare what you're finding on underwriting versus the marketing side. So it gives you some intelligence there. You would then basically, the end result in all these applications or any alternative here is really to come up with some type of a list with all the relevant information on how to go after that list of customers. So you rank customers based on the scores from best to worst, and obviously that's going to be your focus. If you don't have the external claims data, then you're going to have to really leverage off your underwriting model. And I mentioned before, that's going to involve getting as much data as you can, focusing on those predictors that are most important, and working your way down that list. You want to normalize for differences in that you may see in new area, new states, new territories that maybe were not going to be picked up in the underwriting model. So that's a factor, the consideration when you don't have that external claims data. And the end result, you're gonna do the same thing. You're gonna score up and rank the risk from best to worst. So you can compile the data and present it in a kind of interesting ways graphically. You know, this is obviously not a real example. It wouldn't be this concentrated, but you know, it just does illustrate the example here of, you know, your first step in this process is really to look at those areas that have been scoring well, and then you're going to try to figure out, how do I get those? How do I get to that customer base? But in this heat map, you look at the risk scores from the green being the best, all the way down to the orange being the worst. So this will give you some kind of idea of where you want to focus, and you would overlay your distribution and other factors to kind of consider drill down in that area. You may go through some kind of decision tree process where you start now, as you're going back to the green, that's going to be your predefined area of growth. And then you may consider these other factors that I mentioned before, which is if you're an agency company, then you want to look at how well those agents in that area have performed. So that's going to be a factor in terms of where specifically in that area might you want to concentrate on. Another factor might be the customer demographics. So are the customer demographics in your favor? Obviously, there's a lot of changes going on in the economy in terms of who's growing and businesses are struggling. So changes in demographics are an important factor to consider. So you can go through this kind of decision tree process to really hone in on those areas that you want to focus and, again, maximize your chances of winning. The end product of the marketing application is a target marketing list, and depending on the application, you may need in the line of insurance, you may need a decent amount of other information that'll help the marketing folks actually attract those risks. So whether it's referral information, is it an individual maybe that could be part of a group? Do you need some group information? In particular, I think on a direct side, you're going to need to provide more ways or more intelligence around that customer base. And the agency side, it may be a little bit more straightforward in terms of information that you want to compile. But you're going to need some other information. You can even build some type of a referral model that would look at likely other businesses that are current customers that could know the customer you're targeting. So referral information could be helpful. Group information could be helpful. As much intelligence as you can provide to the marketing folks, the better. So they have a good way of going after that customer base. And obviously, you're going to have the score and rank order those scores and all the address and contact information. This is just a dumbed-down version of a list for a physician application. Where you're putting in score, you may put in that unique identifier to be able to attract that specific customer. You may put the nearest agent to get at the whole demographic issue. And then again, you can kind of show this on the heat map, and then show those agencies within those areas of focus. So it'll help point you in the right direction. And then you're going to put address. You're going to put all the contact type information on there as well to help the end user. a couple of additional points, a few of them I think I've mentioned, is on the agency side, in order to get that nearest agent, you're going to want to geocode the addresses of the accounts as well as the agencies. And that'll give you a distance measurement to kind of, again, provide what agency is probably the best to handle that account in terms of proximity. Then you're also going to look at the customer profile in terms of what agency tends to write those types of customers. So it's not as simple as location. You're going to want to factor in some other things as well. And as I mentioned before, the profitability tends to drop as you get further away from the location of the agency's office. The last point I've made, which is really looking at that profile, and do you have good alignment? It's another thing that we've seen in looking at agency performance is when you focus on the customer base where the agency has done well, you will likely tend to do well. So good alignment is important. On the direct side, you need to provide as much information as you can because it's a little bit harder for your internal marketing folks to actually use this intelligence. So as I said before, you can, you know, any additional information you can provide, be it group, be it agency, not agency, but be it you know, other referrals that you may have related to that type of business. Any additional information you can provide would be helpful to the marketing folks. So, does everyone smell that food? It's kind of distracting. That's my presentation. I'm done. I'm going to eat.
Bring us something back.
Marty, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, thanks, Gary. No pressure. Yes, I'm the only thing standing between you and lunch. As it comes in through the doors and every place else, you know, feel free to take a deep breath. It's good sometimes for me to understand the audience. So by show of hands, I'm going to ask one or two questions, maybe three, to kind of understand where you fit. How many of you are in marketing now? None. Good. So this is an educational session that you actually might benefit from. How many of you are commercial lines? And personal lines? Okay, so you've kind of got the, it's kind of a split audience, which is a good mix for us. What I'm going to talk about today is predictive modeling and marketing. And many of you know that ISO has gotten into predictive analytics. Really as kind of a fast follow to what everyone else in the industry was already doing. ISO didn't really have a dedicated unit looking at predictive analytics until it formed one in 2005. So we're coming on up on our fifth birthday towards the end of 2009. But we've now come at it at a pretty significant way. We've got about 45 people in the unit. 30 of them with advanced degrees, many of them, masters or PhDs. I'd say the ratio of quants to quants with an actuarial bent is about 4-1 right now. So we have some standout actuaries in the crew: Glenn Myers, Jim Calton, John Baldwin, Pat Woods, Rob Curry. Not directly working for me, but as subject matter experts when it comes to Pat and John Baldwin and Rob. And also, new hires, Dave Cummings, who joined us from State Farm recently. So there's a lot of investment that ISO's been doing around predictive analytics. But the key takeaway is, I'm not an actuary. Those actuaries work for me. I came in from the marketing department. And that's why it's important for actuaries here to learn about what's going on in marketing, what's going on in marketing analytics, how do you translate strategy to tactics to actually take great ideas about segmentation and risk-based pricing and agency management and compensation and actually execute a business plan where you can add policies where you want them, price policies where you need them, and keep your rate and keep your business sound. So in terms of the business environment, why are things are coming so data-driven? And I'm very much a quant. I'm very much a data-driven person. I believe in advertising, but I also believe in marketing, and I believe in quants. Being able to say, if you guys want to sit in the front so I can crane my neck, I'll move through that. The market has moved, especially in personal lines. Every kid's got an iPod. Everybody's on the internet. Even grandma surfs the web. People have Facebook accounts. I mean, everyone expects now that you're online, you're in tune, you can find each other, you can find information. They expect to be able to do business. Now, most carriers are pretty far behind that curve. They fake it good in some cases. They put up a website and they have pretty nice user experience. But in many cases, behind the scenes, there's a bunch of little, you know, elves running around with paper making it all happen. So it's not like there's anybody that I know that's actually, you know, solved the problem, because the market is always and continually changing. So each company has to define, attract, retain, and grow the quote-unquote good customers, you know, match their offering to customers, and this is, you know, rate making and product management. You know, you have to build your product to what customers actually want. Improve your customer-facing processes, and like I said, all the little elves running around behind the scenes, the customers don't care. They don't care if your expense ratios are higher because you don't have an IT system that does this cheap. They care that they have a good user experience. And then when you manage your expenses later, you'll be more profitable. So it's you know, focusing on the customer is really important. And reduce expenses while building skills. And skill building is a big thing. There, you know, there were, just like there weren't 30 people doing predictive analytics dedicated at ISO, you know, 5 years ago, most of the jobs that are in the marketing department, the most of the quants that are not actuaries or actuaries now that are learning a lot more about GLMs and higher order math and different techniques to do modeling. You know, this is the pace of change. I mean, this has all happened in the last, you know, 10 to 12 years. And it's not slowing down. In fact, it's getting more intricate. It's getting more difficult to keep up. And we have to build a new type of team. Yeah, we're bringing in text mining people. We're bringing in geospatial sciences people. We're bringing in folks that that understand marketing and advertising. It's a multidisciplinary process, which is a lot more fun than it used to be. Now, how many of you guys actually do rate making? And how many of you have actually filed rates? I'm just learning about filing rates. God, it's brutal. I thought modeling was the hard part. You know, you're going out and convincing all the different regulators and departments of insurance that what you did is actually clever. It's a little harder than I thought. So I have a lot more respect for that part of the process than I ever did before. So the purpose of this slide isn't to show you anything that you don't already know, except maybe to underline the little orange box at the bottom that says, it's incremental improvements to many different areas are going to be what makes your company profitable. And, you know, marketing and customer relationships is not just about any one of these boxes. It's about all of the boxes. And how do you, what features of your product you say, to your customers, hey, if you really care about financial security, look, hey, our company didn't blow up. And some of you can still say that. If you wanted to say that, we have agents that are local, you have to prove that, but it's something that matters if customers are worried about claims. But financial stability is a big piece right now. Now, here's the thing that I talked about change, and I talked about how you're going to have to manage, your own groups. How many of you actually know that there is a marketing analytics group in your company? And how many of you actually talk to them? Oh, good. Okay. So, the first part is don't be afraid of change. And go to embrace it. And this slide is the one that you need to take home. This is the grief cycle. You're all going to have to understand how to be a grief counselor with your peers, with your colleagues, with the marketing department, with the underwriting group, with the claims group. This constant process of changing, and I like the, this is off Wikipedia, but the roller coaster ride as a person wiggles in their desperate efforts to avoid change. It's a great visual just to think of, everyone who's in the market now sees the changes. How many of you actually have insurance? Come on, do you have insurance? Everybody has insurance. The only way you're going to grow is to put the person next to you out of business. And that's a very disturbing thought. But that's what change in this market, and especially personal lines, has a lot of meaning. An old slide, going from 97 to 2001, showed that you know, the market share of the top 25 writers used to be 2 out of 3, I'd say, policies. We're still not at the household level yet, so I don't know about customers. And then as it, you know, went from 1977 to 2001, they say almost 4 out of 5. Well, it's gotten even more crazy since then. If you look at the number of carriers that were actually writing personal auto insurance in the U.S., you know, from 1980 through about 1995, there wasn't really a significant net up or down. You know, everybody was kind of writing and everybody was doing their thing, and you know, yet the top 25 had 2 out of 3 customers, but you know, there was still lots of market share for everybody else. But around 95, and I don't know if that just happens to be when Progressive came out as, you know, moving from substandard to standard and really getting involved in predictive analytics, or if that was when GEICO got formed, or what other sea change, when credit came out to the market as you know, new predictors in the insurance space, or as that recapitalization went on and people started to buy each other up. But since 95, you know, 1/3 of the companies, you know, have disappeared from the market in the last 12 years. And, you know, the thing that's interesting is the trend doesn't look like it's unstable. It's not up and down. It's not floating around. It's pretty much just diving towards the, you know, towards the x-axis. And I think it will be hard for anybody that does predictive analytics to think that that line's going to change materially anytime soon. So now we have about 320, 330 odd companies in the market, where we used to have you know, close to 450, 460. But then as we also look at the market share, from 95 to 2007, you know, the top 25, the top, you know, the top 10, the top 25, the top 50, you know, out of those 300 odd companies, the top 50 now control 91% of the market. And that means that 280 odd companies are now fighting over 9% of what's left of the market. And that is a sobering, you know, statistic that if you haven't been watching, it's important. And it's why that maybe marketing is important to you and your careers now too, because, you know, you've got to have your marketing guys smarten up and go get market share. So how analytics fuels this competition. If my book of business, you know, has you know, 3 risks, you know, a $600 risk, an $800 risk, a $1,000 risk, you know, my average rate for rate making is $800, and my total revenue will be $2,400. I just put $1 billion behind each of these, or $100 million behind each of these, and you know, you're talking, you know, pretty soon real money. But the idea is the same. If someone out-selects me with smarter pricing, with smarter marketing, with a better execution of their strategy, then they can, you know, come in and adversely select against my book, and instead of taking, you know, one of each of 3 customers, you know, a low one, a high one, and a middle one, they could focus in and really compete away, you know, my best customers, my most profitable customers, which then my average cost would go up, and my total revenue would go down. So my margins are going to be diminishing. And then, you know, to take it, you know, to the next logical step, you know, if they pushed me from my average rate from 8 to 900, 900 to 1,000, then they can come back in when I'm charging 900. They can, you know, go after my $800 customers. So it's, you know, this is what you're going to want to do to each other, and this is what everyone's trying to do to everybody, you know, in the marketing world, is find the good customers, attract them away, keep them, and then find programs around customer retention, customer lifetime value, all those sorts of ways to make, you know, personalized carrier, you know, customers stickier, so that you know, you don't have to go out and get new customers every year. You can hold on to the ones you have. Right. Did you just run out of juice? I guess we're over. Well, I can put the breather. Just kidding. 1 second, we're working on some technical problems.
This plug is
Gary, is there one to your lower right? Power strip?
Yes, sir.
Is that power strip down there?
No? Oh, I see it. Okay, this one in here looks like it's dead.
Skill sets are very transferable. You still have to go get some new subject matter expertise, maybe learn some new data sets, maybe learn a few new techniques, but there's more jobs than ever at big companies for people with modeling skills. And the marketing department is open for business just as the same as claims and underwriting and the actual rating side. The thing that's maybe even better is that in marketing, there's dozens of models that need to be built for a comprehensive strategy. We almost done?
Almost.
So I'll talk about the ones that you're going to see. How many of you are direct companies? Oh, good. One in five. And the rest agency? The way you execute with an agency force is a little bit different than with a direct. But in both cases, you're going to define an appetite, you're going to look for prospects, and then find some way to get the frontline folks to work the list to make the calls. I mean, there's a lot of companies who spend tons of money building a list and building a model, and then when they give it to the agents, they don't work the list. And they wonder what happened to the portfolio. How many of you actually look at your attrition? And when that's surprisingly a lower number than I was hoping to see. Now, when you do look at your attrition, how many of you map attrition to the position in the scoring portfolio? That's even fewer. So everyone now understands, how to compete against the rest of the guys in this room is, portfolio analysis is where you should put most of your effort in understanding how your current customers score against your predictive modeling process, who's a trading out of your book, and where in your distribution are they leaving, and who are you bringing into your book as new business. And how do they fit? Because if you're losing everyone at the top of the decile curve and bringing everyone in at the bottom of the decile curve, your portfolio is actually shrinking back and to the left, which is not the right way to go from a profitability standpoint. You want to be moving up and to the right. So
it's just a slow machine.
Oh, yeah, this is a good guy. Does anyone have any general questions at the moment? So the slides that you would have seen for the, if you will see in a minute, for those of you that have a direct course, you can buy householding databases, Claritas, different marketing agencies, you'll have them. There's about 120 million households in America. You pay for those. How many of you actually have householding databases inside your companies now? Yeah, most of them. So if you're big, you have a householding database. If you're medium size, you probably have a vendor doing it for you, where the vendor has the householding database. The skill sets that you're going to need for working in this space is a lot more data management. Yeah, you can't put 120 million households into a spreadsheet. you'll need to build out marketing plans and geospatial processes. Working with direct marketing versus advertising, you'll try to define a customer at the household level, and then look at the wallet share of that household and that customer's total insurance spend. How many of you do that now? Do you have any kind of a household wallet share concept? Maybe one? No more? Well, someone nods their lying. You need to be doing that. Also, you don't know what your market penetration is. The idea of looking at the wallet share of a household, especially personal lines, is that as they mature as a family, as they mature in their business life, you can directly link how much stuff they have with their income and their life stage. And the more stuff they have, the more insurance they need. Whether they need autos, a secondary auto, homeowners, life insurance, scheduled liability possessions, each of these things is kind of predictable. As you watch them move through their career and their life stages, they accumulate more stuff, and you should be selling more into their household. Estimating what each household's income is, what their wealth status is, gives you an idea of how much penetration should you have on the account versus how much you actually have. And the most companies that I know still struggle with what they actually have inside of a household. How many people, let's show hands again, believe that they really have a customer-centric view of their personal customers? A couple? Yeah. Most of you are probably where I was 5 years ago when I was working with a carrier. It was a very product-centric view. We knew all about policies in force. We could look at houses, but we couldn't really look at households. We had an affluent book of business that had many houses and many cars. Trying to get them all into the same group was very difficult to understand how we're penetrating those accounts. We'll just call this dead.
It just takes a while. I mean, I've got such a huge low set on this thing. It's coming up. It'll give me another minute.
So there's models for each of those. So on the prospecting and attraction side, you're looking at who do you not have now that you want to bring in. For customers that you do have, you want to penetrate the account. You want to add up all the wallet share that you can for them. And so in some cases, you want to offer them a smarter, better product, either changing their tiers or changing their features or terms and conditions. Or you want to add a product. So it's either an upsell from standard to preferred, or a cross-sell from household to auto to scheduled value possessions to umbrella coverage. And then in the end, there's what I call the win-back strategy, which is look at everyone that's just left you across the last few years. And most personal lines customers, retention rate is a good retention rate is maybe 90-92%. So basically 1/12 of your book is churning every year for whatever reason. Spending more time and understanding why people are leaving and how to solicit them to see how you bring them back is looking at the third part of that that change. Now, how many of you understand the term elasticity? Almost everybody. Good. Because the optimization guys down the hall later today and tomorrow really key in on that, and it helps understand how choosy would your customers be if you went to raise price. Would they choose to shop more, or would they be so loyal to you because of the value promise and the brand that you've developed with them that raising their rates 5% or 10% even wouldn't change their mind? And that's part of the marketing strategy that it's not necessarily all quantitative. There's a lot of qualitative research there to understand how do you reach out to a customer, give them a message of hope. A lot of people say insurance is a promise to pay. It's You don't get anything for it besides a piece of paper. You don't really want to have anyone damage your property or damage yourself. So it's one of those promises that you hope you never have to ask someone to keep. But when you do, you want it to be done timely, fairly, and quickly. So if you really convince your service level, your customer-facing processes, that you can deliver on that promise, a lot of people will say, well, why switch to another company if the value I'm getting from this current relationship is so high? And that's, I guess, is part of the educational component here. If you're going to do one thing to kind of enhance the value you bring back to your company after the day, is think about how can you add value to your customer's experience, whether it's a business-to-business commercial account or an agent, or a business-to-consumer direct relationship.
Okay, we're back up. You need to tell me where that you saved that file. Do you remember?
It's on your desktop.
It's on my desktop.
Dragged a bunch of slides, but there's one or two in here that I think it's worth sharing before the end of the process and before we start lunch. How much time?
We still have 40 minutes.
You have 40 minutes? Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. You poor audience. Don't worry, it's not a completion. You'll still get your credits even if you only stay here for. Yeah, question in the back?
There's a question for you on the external source.
So the question was, where do you get external data to help you understand more about the market and potential customers? Since half the audience is commercial and half is personal, I thought maybe Gary can address the commercial part in a second. But when I set a marketing group that did both, Dun & Bradstreet was a big resource for information on commercial accounts. For the personal side, we looked at census information, householding databases, Claritas survey for a lot of the data we provide. When it gets to third-party losses, if you don't have a lot of data in your own book, that's where self-promoting advertisement, companies like ISO come in. We've got aggregated losses across 30-40% of the market. And can provide information at a very granular level.
Where were you?
Okay, I'll find it.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Gary. So the this slide you can take home and show your bosses because it explains to them why it's going to take so long for you to actually give them a list of customers that they should go in and try and recruit. Going from having data to, it's your question about where do you get information about the external market. The marketing guys know it, the consulting guys know it. You could call Gary and he's got, half a dozen data sets that he uses regularly. And when I was in marketing, I had vendors that did mailing lists. When I was working on a commercial group, there's all sorts of mailing list vendors and all sorts of groups and trade associations. If you were going to do a target program like for the bug man, you can go to a list broker that has information about everybody who does pesticide work, that does extermination, craft a program particularly for them, and then work that list, work that group in the trade association, and find an agent who actually specializes in the risk around that community of service providers. So that's how you would get into a new market. If you were going to go into how do you build a product around that, ISO forms and loss cost for commercial accounts would be a place to start. And then you modify and customize your product based on that underlying language. At the very end, you know, I think that everyone who's said that they're, you know, they do work in modeling, you know, will testify that you know, the models come after a lot of subject matter expert interrogation, after a lot of data review, after a lot of interim analytics of just understanding what you have. Yeah, and maybe at the end you get a model out that's good, but it's not always a guarantee. And then even when you do build a good model, it's always version 2.0, version 3.0 that you should be, you know, struggling to get to the, you know, to the next level. So the visually, this is what I was trying to say earlier about as life stages change, the need for insurance changes, and it typically goes up and up and up and up and up. You know, you just keep aggregating more stuff. You have more more houses, more cars, more things. And then at the end of your days, as you start to wind it out, maybe you sell the second house. Maybe you don't need all the cars. You know, maybe grandma gets rid of her motorcycle. You don't have as much stuff. But you still have, at that time, hopefully, a customer that's been with you for 50 years. And if you've been able to retain that customer for that long, you will have avoided the cost of new business acquisition for 49 years. And that's a great expense management on your part, to hold on to your customers and make yourself more competitive. And the wallet share stacking, 100,000 here, 100,000 there, another 50 there. Pretty soon you can see that a customer could actually be worth, on an exposure basis, $1 million. That's not as big as a commercial client, but the exposures stack up pretty significantly and pretty quick. And if you can hold on to them over the years, every customer that you've created as a customer, not just a product holder, you have a unique relationship that you want to keep that person branded with your company and keep them with you. Now, I've seen a couple companies who have been product-based, and they talk to me about attrition, and they go, how do you know that your customer's not happy? It's like, well, they don't have policies with us anymore. It's like, by the time they're no longer buying any policies from you, how do you open a dialogue? And the answer is they don't. So the having a customer perspective where you can look at multiple lines of insurance, most customers will make the decision to leave in fits and starts, unless they just get up and move to a new area and get a new agent, where they'll just shut down everything at one address and start everything up at another address. So having an early indicator of when is a customer starting to defect is a chance to do some outbound calling, send them a piece of mail, tell them that you love them. Do anything to try and get their attention that says that you care about them and appreciate their business. Because it's much harder to get a new customer than it is to hold on to a good customer. So in terms of the models, I talked about them briefly, but being able to show acquisition campaigns, cross-sell, upsell, segmentation, the selection, pricing. Now, yield management, it's kind of a piece of math that comes out of the airline industry and hotel industry, where the last seat on an empty plane is worth zero if you close the door and go. You'd be better off selling that seat to somebody at the last minute for $200 than saying my price will never budge below $400. Because once that plane takes off, you've lost the opportunity. Yield management more on an insurance book has more to do with how do you combine multi-product prices, how do you establish a lifetime value prospect. If as actuaries you understand cash flows, putting together that customer's set of cash flows across a 3 to 5 to 10 year period and figuring out where would it make sense to bundle products? And that's kind of an anathema to a lot of insurance companies who have product managers. The house guy doesn't want to give away any of his margin to the car guy, doesn't want to give any way of his margin to the other people. So it's culturally having that shift to say keeping the customer with our company is the most important thing, and settling out, petty product management, profit sharing squabbles, should be secondary. And then attrition prediction, forced cancellation, win-back programs. Not every customer is a good customer. When you build that decile chart, the guys who are at the 1th percentile of the worst of the worst customers, if you can't price them right, maybe you don't need them. So it's not that you should think that every customer is the same. Every customer is not the same. That's why predictive modeling works. You can create segmentation, and then choose to have strategies of how to interact with those customers in a variety of fashions that add value. And so service differentiation based on their portfolio position is try and retain and cross-sell and upsell your best people to make them even better. Running loss control services, agency contacts, re-underwriting, and again cross-sell and upsell for the medium group. And if you look at that decile chart, there's like two or three deciles at the top and two or three deciles at the bottom, and the other, roughly 4 to 6 deciles are kind of in the middle. And that's what these three, bullets, kind of relate to. Your top quartile, your middle 50%, and your bottom quartile. How would you, work with your underwriting partners to say, what would we do different? Should we put all our effort into retaining our worst customer? Probably not. And if you're, when we did the show of hands earlier, we talked about portfolio management, and we talked a little bit about, hey, raise your hands if you differentiate services based on where people are in your scoring algorithms. That's what it was all about. It's like, do you take what you know about your customers and actually change what you do day to day based on that knowledge? And if the answer is no, then my argument is that you should be. So this is the same idea of a portfolio view for underwriting analysis of who's, and you can use this for everybody. Who's going to be my most profitable? Distribution falls out maybe like this. Who's going to be a candidate to defect in an attrition model? Who should I put most of my effort into? Where they fit on these distributions, and as you build different models for upsell, cross-sell, attrition, defection, win-back, you're going to have distributions on 5 or 6 or 10 dimensions. And as you interplay those together, you'll have the raw material for optimization. That what would you do for a customer that looked like this? Condition on this new information, condition on this other distribution, condition on this other metric, and then how do you use that to affect your strategy? Who are you gonna call tomorrow? And ultimately, you want to grow your book in this direction. You want it to grow up and to the right. More profitable, more sticky, more retained. Longer lifetime value, better price optimized. Even given, I don't like to use the word optimize in insurance because you can only raise your rates once or twice a year. You're not really optimizing at a market pace, but you can do better than nothing. And that's, I think, a big point of the other presentations here. So for the folks that haven't seen, how many of you of your companies have CRM applications? A couple? Yeah, well, a lot of you probably do, but you just never heard of them because you've not been over in the marketing department. Sales Logic is a common one. All sorts of different pieces. This is a slide out of Forrester. But the key is the common glue is analytics. How do you time marketing, service, sales channels, the different distribution channels of face-to-face, mail, telephone, internet, agents. And how do you hook together employees and business partners and customers? That's a level of sophistication of data integration that, because you've not been exposed to a lot of marketing, that's a learning curve you're going to have to pick up. Some of your companies already have these data assets. Some of you don't, and you have to start tracking them. It's a process. that you can master, because a lot of industries have mastered it. It's not focusing on customers is not an insurance problem. It's a financial services problem. It's an airline problem. It's a newspaper boy problem. Everybody worries about how to keep good customers and make bad customers into better customers. And as part of that, you'll see the sales process. So lead gathering and targeting, this is what your marketing department will do and what you would do in support of them. The third-party databases, again, are there's lots of business-to-business databases and directories. Appending more and more information onto them to see if they fit your appetite, if they're big enough, if they're profitable enough, if they're growing fast enough, if their claim histories have the right trajectory to them. Lead qualification, and then the sales pipeline. Luckily, you can stay in actuarial and not have to worry about the pressures of revenue generation. Everyone's going to fault you for not having a good product, because it's always a finger pointing exercise. Well, if I had a better product, customers would come to my door, and you would say, well, geez, if customers were out there, we would just sign them up, and it should be easy. It's not easy to get customers, even though you all have insurance. How many of you, raise your hands, everybody has insurance. How many of you switched insurance companies last year? How many of you switched insurance companies in the last 5 years? It's the same effect. I mean, you're a customer too. And, trying to understand, why you made your choices, and then scale that up to an entire book of business and portfolio is some of the thinking that you can add value back in your own organizations. Oops, I went too fast on that one. Here, as part of the educational format, there's advertising and direct marketing. For those of you who are direct, it's very targeted and selective. You have a deep depth of data and a name tracking system where you can say, here are the people I mailed to, here are the people I called to, here are the people I did an agency visit with, and then track their decision over a period of 6 months following that targeted intervention to see, did you have any effect on that? And, return on investment or marketing campaign management is a set of data skills that you'll pull together where you're trying to see kind of a cause and effect almost. I mean, there's so many exogenous variables that you'll never really know why they picked you over somebody else. But the target marketing hit rates right now are somewhere below 2%. So, if you mail out 100,000 pieces of mail, maybe you get 1,500, 2,000 people, calling back in and saying that they're interested in being a new customer, that go into your prospecting system and then get a quote and hopefully sit with you as a new customer. And these marketing campaigns are ongoing. You always have a business, need to grow profitably. Most marketing departments run probably half a dozen to 10 campaigns a year, whether it's cross-sell or upsell, new business acquisition, agency focus. If you've not seen them, they're very busy, and they're running campaigns and analysis. A lot of the things they do for advertising, and especially on the direct side, have metrics and expenses, down to the dollar. How much did it? How many pieces did you mail? What was the postal rate? How did you mail them? What was the collateral? What was the message? All that stuff is very quantifiable, and they can track to see, is the program successful or not. Usually with about a 6 to 8 month window after they actually drop the mail or place the advertisement. So it's a way of having to prove that that you're good at what you're doing and you can see the effects. And the pricing actuaries and the underwriters and line of business folks, will use that as part of their metric for the cost of new business and cost of acquisition. So the big new thing is on business lists, and this is the question before, SIC codes, the Dun & Bradstreet stuff, maybe some information from ISO. On the consumer side, there's all sorts of things you can get appended to households. The new thing that's come out recently is geospatially derived estimated loss cost. And that's one of the things that Darlene Pogrebinski and her team at ISO have spent a lot of time on in the last couple of years, of trying to differentiate at a very granular level, down to a census block group. What are the loss costs on a homeowner side? What are the loss costs on personal auto side? Directly correlated to things that go on in a very local neighborhood. And using geospatial information and risks information and loss information to get way below the standard zip or zip cluster territories to say where inside of a geography do I have knowledge of where better customers are. On data-driven campaign management and pricing optimization, there's all the different targeted marketing pieces and data analysis, but data-driven campaign management is a big piece of what the marketing guys do on direct and in support of agents. On our commercial business side, the marketing department would do all the work and then sponsor it through the agent channel. So basically the agency partners were getting all the marketing analytics for free. And when they executed on it and added new policies to their book of business, they got all the commission. Nobody just stole their commission back, but they saw the value of having marketing as part of the process. So where we're heading in the geospatial side, on the auto side, we're looking at getting very much below zip code. On the home, at the same thing, getting way below territory down to the census block group. A local area to San Francisco. If you looked at the zip code where our offices are in San Francisco, there's four very different micro territories, inside of one zip cluster. There's Knob Hill, which is like the richest, toniest part of the city. There's the Tenderloin, which is kind of the opposite of Knob Hill. There's Japantown, which is kind of a sleepy bedroom community, if you could characterize it that way. And then there's Fisherman's Wharf, which is where all the crazy tourists are driving with their cell phones on and GPS systems running. It's a very commercial district with lots of out-of-towners driving their cars and finding no parking spaces. So it's this is like one example of why big territories have a lot of opportunity if you can micro-segment. When you look at the small area geography, from a county to a township to a place to a census tract to a block group to a block, it's a very, very small geography. And insurance companies didn't invent this geography. This comes out of the census. And anybody who can sign on to an internet site can get government data, by census. If you're really practicing a little, diligence around customers and using census information, you probably don't want to use the last census. You want to use projections that economists make. And Claritas is one of the stronger third-party data sets out there to get information on projections on. If you looked at a specific area, and this is New Jersey, where the home of ISO, using loss costs at the census block group level shows that there's a lot of gradations that inside this area, if you had one rate for this whole area before, you could actually micro-segment and use that information to take your old scoring algorithm, add new information, and do kind of a champion-challenger framework. And what this 3D bar chart shows is that in the challenger model, which is down to the right, versus the existing score quintiles, that you're getting a separation and segmentation. And no matter which way you look at it, your old score plus the new information gives you better segmentation. And going into these pockets of data here in this 5x5 grid, you can see that you'd want to avoid some areas, and you'd want to spend a lot more money and a lot more effort marketing to other areas if the price for this entire group are going to be the same. So on the competitive advantage of using micro-segmentation and micro-territories for marketing analytics, and even for risk-based pricing and pricing initiatives, both in commercial lines and in personal lines, especially where commercial lines has an analog, like private passenger type autos. The bug man that parks down the street from you looks just like the soccer mom. You know, they both have vans, they both drive the local streets, they both have the same traffic generators and weather and crime or whatever else is going on in that same neighborhood. So using these type of things, you can take the actual cost, which you know for a territory, right now you can just have the mean, and that's what you charge everybody for for that entire geography. But what you actually know is that there's a distribution of losses. And, some parts of that territory are going to have, maybe a 80% relativity, and other parts might have 120% relativity if the base is at one. So what you'd like to try and do is, use the information around those micro territories on a marketing standpoint to predict where you'd be able to fit a curve to the theoretical distribution with real data, and then avoid the indicated relativity areas that are much higher than the base rate for that territory, and attract yourself or focus more on the ones that have a much better potential for being profitable, even at the rate that you're already approved to charge for that area. So that's the wrap up for today. We'll open up for questions with Gary. I guess the big takeaway is going to be it's not a competitive advantage if you don't use it. I hope that in the session you learned something more about the marketing guys aren't totally out to lunch. They have good intentions, and they're just as quantitative as you are. If you're talking to the quantitative side of the marketing, there's still all the qualitative ones who want to do surveys. There's a lot of quantitative people out there in other parts of your company. Thank you.
Any questions?
I can give my perspective, and I guess it is a challenge. I think it's just a part of the process. I think when you do, in particularly when you do micro segmentation, you're finding things other than what's in your rate structure. So the underlying assumption is that your rate structure is adequate, right? So there are certain factors that you, at least in the commercial line side, in the personal line side, there may be more stuff that's filed. On the commercial line side, there's a lot of factors that aren't filed. So a lot of your predictors are coming from things that are outside your rating plan. So those things are not likely to drift or change as frequently as what you have filed. But I think you always have to do this kind of, from our perspective, it's kind of a full model, base model, which is what are you already picking up in your rating plan, and what is your full model kind of picking up, and what's that difference? And you have to, you do have to reevaluate that base model as you move forward. I think it's part of the process, but if you can get some predictors that are really outside of that rate structure, then the rank of the customers are not likely to dramatically change.
Well, my business experience has been maybe a little jaded. I worked for a company that had 3 CEOs in 4 years, and when change comes in at the top and they bring along with them their own baggage and they say, now we're going to grow this way, there's really nothing that can help you. Just hang on and wait till they rotate out and maybe the company will go back to being sane. But it's when you get that kind of craziness at the top, it's
even if you're a $4 or $5 billion company, it's just going to be a hell to pay. Now you might get lucky, and the last person that joins is the superstar that rights the ship and gets everything running. But it's being wishy-washy is not only bad for the employees; it's bad for the distribution channel. The agents hate it. I mean, you told them 3 years ago to grow like this, and then last year you cut all that business out of your book and totally burned them. So it's a very destructive thing to not have a strategy, and constantly churning and chasing other tactics, versus having a real strategy is really a critical wrongness. and you might want to evaluate whether that's a good company to be with for the long term.
Anyone else?
I'll let Darlene answer that.
Thank you all very much. Thank you, our speakers.
Thank you. I apologize for that. You handled it really well.
Will slides be on the CFS website for these things?
Yes. Yes.
They'll get up there.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. Thank you. Great job.
Thank you.
Take care.
You handled that really. Lesson learned. Make sure the power supply works.
I actually had a
well, hey, darling.
I should have checked. I thought that. That's hard to handle it well. Luckily, it wasn't his first time with the material. It was also had it in his mind.
And we didn't have a hostile audience.
Gary, you can post those, since you have a copy.
I'll post them out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll see you around here.
Yes, thank you. Do you know Darlene Pugliese?
Hello. Hi, nice to meet you. I'm Darlene
statistics, did it work, how much...
And that's based on the factors that you have, right? You're not going to be involved with us.